Thanks, Arv, for getting us started with the really nice, great talk on the first two foundations of mindfulness. And now I'm going to continue with the third and fourth foundations of mindfulness on our quick overview of all this. And as Arv said, we can't really go into anything in a lot of detail, but there'll be more detail in our day long. So the third foundation of mindfulness is mental formations, the mind. And so this foundation covers all of that stuff that goes on in the mind. Thoughts, memories, plans, mental images, emotions too, although in a way they're sort of a blend of the first and third foundation, since emotions are so much a thing of the body as well as a thing of the mind. And as Arv was talking about in Gil Fronsdale's little chart there, these foundations kind of arise naturally from each other. And just as the second foundation arises naturally from the first foundation, the different experiences we have in the body, this sense of unpleasant, pleasant, and neutral in response to body sensations or things we see or touch or hear, so the third foundation arises naturally from the body and from our experiences of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So first, whenever we come in contact with something, you know, a body sensation, a sound, a taste, a smell, whatever it is, all kinds of mental formations come up. You know, first there'll be just the recognizing the thing, you know, naming it. But then memories of all of our previous experience will come up, you know, some of our cultural and family conditioning around this object, fantasies about the object, all sorts of mental activity. And then when we have this perception of the thing as being pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, a whole collection of stuff arises in connection with that. And Arv has touched on this a little bit already, you know, that sort of way where we have this initial experience of pleasant. And then from that, feelings of liking arise, and then feelings of wanting, and then maybe plans about how we're going to get more of the thing or keep the thing, or fantasies of how great it's going to be when we really have this thing all the time, all of that stuff. Or if something's unpleasant, then these feelings of not liking, not wanting, wanting to get rid of the thing, all these plans about how we can get rid of it or destroy it or change it. Maybe we have fantasies about all the horrible things that will happen to us if this thing stays around. Or maybe how it's our fault that this unpleasant thing is present. Or somebody else's fault that this unpleasant thing is there and has happened. So all of that kind of stuff. So it's like there's this body, there's feeling tone, and there's this huge explosion of stuff in the mind, and that huge explosion of stuff is the third foundation. So all of that stuff, our mental stuff, our thoughts, our memories, our fantasies, our emotions, all of this is really familiar to us. It's not really mysterious. In fact, I think a lot of times we feel like we know this all too well. We have a lot more than we would even want. But even though all of these different mental experiences are quite familiar, or many of them, it's a real challenge to be mindful of all of this. Now, one reason for this that sometimes comes up, especially when people are just starting out in meditation, is that we get this mistaken idea that if we're really good meditators, this stuff isn't even supposed to be happening. Our mind should be still. It should be empty of all thought. And, you know, that might happen every once in a while when conditions come together just right. But I think if the goal of your meditation practice is to stop all thought, you're going to have a lot of frustrating experience. It's going to be very disappointing for you because what the mind does, I mean, it thinks. And so thoughts and mental formations are going to arise whether we like it or not. And their arising isn't really under our control. So this idea of stopping thinking is something that for this type of, you know, Vipassana meditation, it's a lot better if you just kind of forget about that and put it to the side. And instead of stopping, trying to stop your thoughts, try instead to be mindful of them, to be aware of what's going on in your mind. And this is what the Buddha actually instructs us to do in the Satipatthana Sutta. He doesn't say, okay, here's the third foundation of mindfulness. Now get rid of everything that's in it. He says, be mindful of this. Be mindful of what's arising in the mind. So our goal in practice isn't to get rid of anything, really. It's to see it for what it is and to understand our true nature. And I think that's something that's really worth keeping in mind all through our practice, that this idea of getting rid of, it isn't really what we're trying to do. It's more to see clearly and to understand. So we don't have to get rid of, but we aren't controlled by these things that are in the mind. But even if we get past this first hurdle of thinking our mental activity shouldn't even be there, it's still really difficult to be mindful of it. And I think a lot of this is because we identify so closely with what's going on in our minds. And I think most of us really do feel on some level, I mean, I know I have that feeling, that we are our thoughts. And this story and narrative that our minds keep telling, there's a sense, this is me, you know, this is me, this voice is me. And because we're so identified and so entwined with this thinking mind and so caught up in it, it's really, really hard to get any distance from it and observe it. We get caught and we get carried away and we get identified. And so this is the real challenge of the practice, to be able to see this process and begin to move away from that. You know, notice every time we get caught and carried away and lost. And when we notice, to be willing to stop, come back to some place where we can ground our attention, get some equilibrium, and begin again until we can have enough stability so we can actually observe the processes of the mind instead of being like totally caught up in them. So the vantage point we're trying to cultivate in our meditation is not to be identified with our thinking, but more to observe it. And I mean, it isn't even quite right to say we are observing. But that's sort of how it feels a lot of the time. So there's a sense in which there's thought, and there's awareness that thinking is occurring. So in meditation, we try to shift our focus from the thought itself to the knowing. Or we rest in that which knows that thinking is happening instead of in the thinking. Or another way of saying this is to say that we rest in the silence out of which the thinking arises. So there's this sense of, this thinking is going on, but we're not really, it isn't really us. And there are different ways to cultivate this. It's something that really comes with practice. And at first it's really hard, and then it gets more natural as time goes on. One way is to use like a soft mental note to break up the momentum of this storyline when thinking is occurring. So when you notice thinking, you can just softly say to yourself, thinking, thinking. Or if you want to be more refined, you can notice different types of thinking, planning, remembering, fantasizing. Maybe use your mental note to note what type of thinking comes up. Or if there's a very persistent story that arises over and over, you might have a note that represents that story. And so this kind of noting can help to break up the momentum of the thinking and break up this sense of being just totally caught and carried away in the thought and observe it. And this doesn't work for everybody, but it can be really helpful sometimes in the practice. And there might be other times too when your stability of mind is a little bit stronger and you can just sort of listen to the flow of your thoughts as if you're sitting there like listening to the radio of your mind. Or since what arises in the mind isn't just words but also images, Joseph Goldstein sometimes talks about this as pretending you're sitting in a movie theater watching the movie of your mind play out. So, you know, all of this stuff is going on and there's just, you know, watching, knowing this is happening. And as you do this, you may notice that this mind activity just arises spontaneously. It's not something you have control over or plan. It just arises. And so you may begin to notice and see that this thinking that happens, this isn't really me. Of course, you know, we have choice, as Ard was talking about, in whether we let these mental images and thoughts come and go, or whether we really follow them, attach to them, keep bringing them up. You know, there's some choice about that, but just what spontaneously arises, we don't have so much control. And as I mentioned before, in the guided meditation, you'll also notice that just like sensations in the body, these thoughts and images have their own feeling tone of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Some of them may be very attractive and alluring. We really get caught up in them and they lead us away for hours, you know, fantasies and things. Others are painful. We try to ignore them or turn away from them. And others are pretty neutral. They just sort of come and go. And those are the ones where we might sort of see how really fleeting and evanescent our thoughts are. We can hardly, once we notice them, they're gone, you know. So that's something to be aware of too, this feeling tone associated with your mental activity. So there's all this mental activity to pay attention to. And because we only have so much time and I don't want to go too long and I better hurry up, I could say a lot more about this third foundation, but we need to move on to the fourth foundation, the mindfulness of dhammas. And sometimes this can be a confusing foundation, since there are lots of different definitions of what a dhamma is, and an easy way to think of this, and what I'll emphasize in this short talk, is mindfulness of dhamma with a big T, which is mindfulness, big D, mindfulness of the truth or the teachings of the Buddha. And this is sort of fits in with what Gil Fronsdale said in terms of its awareness of how these things in our mind affect our state of being. If you think about that as being aware of how these things going on in our mind lead to our suffering or not suffering, which is, you know, our state of being. So this fourth foundation is the place where we take all of these different things we see in our body, in our mind, when we're mindful of the first, second, and third foundations, and we put them within the context of the Buddha's teachings. So there's certain categories of dhammas or teachings to be mindful of that are highlighted in the Satipatthana Sutta: the five hindrances, the five aggregates, the six sense bases, seven factors of enlightenment, the Four Noble Truths. And in terms of practicing with these, it can be helpful to use different exercises to focus our attention on them and recognize them. And we'll be talking about some of these and having some of those kind of exercises in this class and in other talks and things we have at SIMS. But I think what often occurs, more often in the longer context of our practice, is that, you know, we learn about these teachings, we learn about these different things that can arise in the mind, just as we're doing with this class. And then when they actually come up in our own practice, we recognize them. So it's not so much like we have a checklist of, oh, here's the three this, here's the five that, we notice them, we cross them off, yeah, I saw this, I saw that, blah, blah, blah. It's not really like that. It's more that we go along, we do our practice being mindful of body, feeling, tone, thoughts, emotions, mental activity, and then we begin to notice these things about them that the Buddha noticed. We begin to recognize these mind states and truths. We begin to recognize how these things we see affect our being and the way that we relate to the world and whether we're suffering or not. And the five hindrances are one example. You know, like we're sitting there and we, you know, notice this pain in the knee that's unpleasant, that we don't want, that we're irritated about, something pleasant, a quiet and calm state of mind. We feel like we want more of it. We start trying to figure out how to get it. And we see these coming up over and over again. And after a while, we go, oh, okay, this is these hindrances, hindrance of craving, hindrance of aversion. And as we recognize them, we begin to see that, oh, this isn't just about me. You know, this isn't about something bad that I'm doing. These are the reactions that the Buddha talked about and the teachers talk about. This is what the mind does. So we begin to be able to recognize these things as a process, you know, something we can be aware of, but we don't have to take personally as an event that says something permanent and probably bad about us. Or the three characteristics too, you know, like as Arv was talking about, when you sit there and you notice pleasant things coming, unpleasant things coming, neutral things coming, these feeling tones just sort of changing, or the things you're feeling in your body and mind changing, you begin to get the sense of, oh, impermanence. Nothing stays the same for long. You begin to see this sense of dukkha, that things aren't always going to be unpleasant, that all of this stuff is just sort of coming and going by itself, not really about me. And maybe you begin to see too how all of these efforts that you make to try to control all of this and to get rid of the pleasant and to get rid of the unpleasant and keep the pleasant and make yourself into a certain sort of perfect person, which never is really so successful. You see all this mental turmoil you caused from fighting with what's going on can often be much worse than the simple experience that's happening. And we begin to sort of see, you know, the second noble truth, dukkha, and the origin of dukkha. So there's this way in which this fourth foundation is a kind of a guide through our journey into insight and awakening. And in his practice guide to the Satipatthana Sutta, the monk Anilayo talks about the first three foundations as laying the groundwork for insight into the three characteristics, you know, which is dukkha or unsatisfactoriness or suffering, impermanence, and not self. And then in this fourth foundation, he says, we proceed to the maturity point of insight, leading up to the breakthrough of awakening. So we work with all of this stuff that's going on in the mind and body, and we get to see from our own experience as we do this, oh, here's impermanence. Here's this unsatisfactoriness. This isn't me. This isn't mine. Something from our own experience. In the words of the sutta, a person is aware as it actually is. This is suffering. They're aware as it actually is. This is the origin of dukkha. They're aware as it actually is. This is the cessation of dukkha. They're aware as it actually is. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering or dukkha. So it's sort of reaching the point, working through this fourth foundation of, okay, now I get it. This is what the Buddha was talking about. So this is kind of the fourth foundation. It's about that journey to get to this point. Now I get what the Buddha was talking about. I'll just end with a short description by the teacher, Ines Friedman, who is part of Gil Fronsdale's group of teachers, and she talks about the fourth foundation, saying, what's the purpose of the fourth foundation of mindfulness? It's liberation. It's freedom. So practicing the fourth foundation, we look at our minds through the eyes of what gives us freedom. So this is sort of a sense, this place where we begin to take all of what we see in our mind and body and put it into that framework that leads to freedom. Just as I said in the guided meditation, such is the way one abides among arising mind objects, vanishing mind objects, independently and not clinging to anything in the world.